Welcome back. I hope, however, the time was spent that it was nurturing in some way. And again, just so happy we have this time to talk to sit together. So I'm gonna invite you to close your eyes. Again, just doing a quick check-in. Where am I? I'm feeling pretty embodied as the mind wandered off somewhere. I'm kind of calling all parts home. Yeah. Nothing to do, nowhere else to be. Can we give ourselves permission to take advantage of this opportunity to sit together, to allow ourselves to be present and available to this moment, to the next? Taking our seats in this fabulous online sangha that's been running for, gosh, 20, almost 25 years, in a practice that's been running for 2,600 years. Naming this to invite ourselves, each of us, to avail ourselves of the lineage, both of this Thursday group, of these incredibly powerful teachings that keep evolving over the centuries. And here we are today in this form. If it's helpful in the mind's eye, and particularly in these early moments of the sit, to literally place yourself in this circle, in this family of Dharma sisters, inviting in a sense of belonging, of welcome. All parts are welcome here. All of you is welcome. And for the anchor of our meditation, I want to invite us to stay in the body, which is not always easy, right? The mind is so conditioned to meander and grasp and plan, and just, it is a generator of thoughts. Yeah, that's what it does. Okay. So we can work with this generator of thoughts by reorienting our attention to the body. And for some of us, an easy place to do that is just in the movement of the breath, this wind element in and out. I love the instructions of just a half breath. Can we give our full attention to the full experience of a body? Half breath in, that pause, half breath out. And I love this invitation, this instruction, because it's a low bar. Can I pay attention for half a breath? Yeah, I can do that. Yeah. And we know as we undertake the practice of sitting that the mind may wander. That is not a problem. It's an opportunity to celebrate when we catch it. Oh, wait, mind, I'm directing my attention to the breath. Half breath in, half breath out. The wind element as it moves in and out, this life-giving force. Yeah. For some of us, the breath is not neutral, either from trauma experience or health conditions or for whatever reason. It can be more agitating than settling. Okay, so then let's invite the attention to just rest perhaps on the feeling of if your hands are holding each other, how your body is supported by the cushion, the chair, the couch, the bed, the floor. Can we allow the attention to rest on the sense of the support underneath us, gravity, earth, and keeping it really basic and simple, but as a way that can also allow us to feel connected. Oh yeah, each one of us, whatever continent we're on, are supported by the earth beneath us, this animal body of ours, resting here, and the different sensations, yeah, pressure of the hands, or if the hands resting on the leg, feet on the floor. Just being able to pick a place as home base so that when we notice the mind meandering or running after a certain thought, we can come back. Oh, wait, so we come back to the half breath in, half breath out, or the sensation in the legs, the sensation in the hands. Please remember there is no such thing as a bad sit. We come, we take our seats literally or figuratively, and we just notice with a gentle curiosity, oh, in this moment, it's just like this. Exhale. Thank you for your practice. hope the sit was lovely. Always a treat to sit together. Today, on this 19th day of January, I wanted to play in the arenas of stillness, patience, equanimity, and the challenge when we're in the busyness of our lives, whether some of us have really busy lives and some of us the externalities of our lives might not be that busy, but our minds can be really busy, right? Sometimes it's both. And how do we, in the course of our lives as householders, find those moments where we can be still? And in so opening up to a sense of stillness, be able to touch in with a body. And I know I have definitely had periods in my life, I'm like, oh, no. It's much easier just to stay busy. Either there's just some tumultuousness internally that I'd rather avoid, or there's just so much momentum. And then the challenge becomes, okay, how can we lean back into remember these teachings as a way of saying, oh, sweetie, it's okay, just pause. Yeah, the mind does what it does. The heart does what it does. Can we meet ourselves with as much ease and gentleness as possible? And this is really contrary for so many of us of the inner voices we have lived with for much of our lives. I know I've shared this before, but in my 20s, well, and prior, I had such a fiercely negative inner voice, the inner critic. Brutal. And it was really uncomfortable to sit with that. I remember the first early sits way back of being like, what is this? And the practice of metta was revolutionary for me as a way of softening the mind, that voice that can be so critical and be like, here, try this. May I be happy. May you be happy. You know, wishing if back on the land, you know, may the birds and the turkeys or the turkeys and all the animals being able to feel that sense of connection. Yeah, that we can come out of our small self. Tarbak talks about the selfing. We kind of spin around in our own narrative about our lives. And this capacity that the teachings offer of, oh, wait, can we connect? Which is why almost weekly I'll talk about, can we root into the earth to feel that sense of connection? The stillness that can come if we allow ourselves to feel rooted in the earth. I somewhat intentionally chose not to read David Wagner's Lost Poem because I feel like I read it a lot, but the line of it, when I'll paraphrase. So when we feel lost, go still, go be still amongst the trees. The trees are not lost. Right? Can we settle into the natural world? The trees are not always neutral for everyone. So I don't mean to, as a dictate, but the invitation to enter into the natural world as support and as a refuge from the busyness and the chaos of our lives. From Wendell Berry, it may be that when we no longer know what to do, we have come to our real work. And that when we no longer know which way to go, we have come to our real journey. The mind that is not baffled is not employed. The impeded stream is the one that sings. And there are so many delightful lines in this, but this a way that's really counter to how we can conditionally think things should go. Like when we no longer know what to do, sometimes we just panic. I don't know what to do. Okay, and this idea like, okay, no, this is where it begins. That there's a surrendering of feeling like we know or that we can control where we're going to go in the sense of, actually, we really don't control much of anything. We can endeavor or aspire to control the mind and our reactivity. It's about it. We can have vast plans, but as we know, they so often go awry. So when we no longer know what to do, we've come to that real work because in that acknowledgement, there's a vulnerability. Yeah. Okay, so then what's possible? I know for myself, I came to sit my first retreat when my life was just a mess. I did not know what else to do. Please, let there be another way of being. And what a blessing that was, because yes, this path of these teachings that say, yeah, there's absolutely another way to navigate life. It doesn't change the externals that will be positive and negative and hard in those eight worldly winds, right? Praise and blame, gain and loss, and so forth, that these are the conditions of this realm. But these teachings really allow us to orient in a different way, such that in letting go of, okay, the ego that wants to say, I know what I'm doing, I can make this happen, and then no, okay, we don't know what to do. Okay, our real work begins when we no longer know which way to go. Again, there's a surrendering of the ego saying, I got this, I know. Because invariably at one point, maybe at several points in our lives, that doesn't work. So how do we surrender to a natural unfolding of what's happening in our lives, that that's our real journey? The mind that is not baffled is not employed. Yeah. To allow there to be a curiosity and a continually questioning of how can I show up as I so aspire to in this life? Yeah. Stepping out from under the reactivity or the anger or the fear that can really hold us and grip us in a way of habitual behaviors that don't feel good. They don't feel good inside. They don't feel good to our loved ones. And it doesn't help us in the way of showing up in the world that we can most make a difference. Yeah. From Maria Howe, the gate. I had no idea that the gate I would step through to finally enter this world would be the space my brother's body made. He was a little taller than me, a young man, but grown himself by then, done at 28, having folded every sheet, rinsed every glass he would ever rinse under the cold and running water. This is what you have been waiting for, he used to say to me. And I'd say, what? And he'd say, this, holding up my cheese and mustard sandwich. And I'd say, what? And he'd say, this, sort of looking around. Can this, whatever this is, right, wherever we are, whether it's 11:15 or 1:15 or 8:15 at night in the course of wherever we are in our lives, literally right now, or just in our the season of our life, the various conditions of relationships, all of that, this is where we are. There's nowhere else to be. What's in the future hasn't actually happened yet. You know, what's happened before has already happened, right? These are not new words to us, but this way of really allowing ourselves to embody, oh, this is what we've been waiting for, this moment. Yeah, there's nowhere else to be. From John Wellwood, forget about enlightenment. Sit down wherever you are. And listen to the wind singing in your veins. Feel the love, the longing, the fear in your bones. Open your heart to who you are right now. Not who you'd like to be. Not the saint you are striving to become, but being right here before you, inside you, around you. All of you is holy. You are already more or less than whatever you can know. Breathe out, touch in, let go. Breathe out, touch in, let go. And you know, Jack will often talk about the self-improvement project that many of us are on. Maybe that's why we're here. And this idea of, okay, maybe this is it, how we are. You know, they're from one of the Zen masters, like near perfect, now change. You know, these teachings really invite us to deeply reckon with our innate goodness. What is our birthright? The birthright of compassionate, steady heart, a still mind. That's our birthright. Can we believe in our own goodness, knowing that the heart can get, the openness of the heart can get obscured, the stillness of the mind, ooh, can get pretty choppy, right? Okay, I talked about this last week. This is the movement of the hindrances. And how can we, in sitting down, taking our seat, or even just cultivating an inner stillness, as we move about or we engage in whatever we engage with in the course of our day, an anchoring, a claiming of, okay, here, can I stay in my bones in this earth element as I do whatever it is in the course of my day, our day, whose day? Yeah. Awareness, John Austin, awareness. Her gaze is so constant. Our every move watched with such affection. A ceaseless vigil without condition or agenda. Silent, patient, unrelenting in her embrace. There is endless room in the heart of this lover, infinite space for whatever foolishness we may toss her way, but she is also crafty, this one. A thief who will steal away everything we ever cherished, all our beliefs, our ideas, all our philosophies, until nothing is left but her shimmering wakefulness, the simple love for what is. I love this invitation to consider this awareness as this benevolent, loving force that holds us. Yeah, there's nowhere else to be, nothing else to do. Can we relax into this awareness? Oh, can I settle here and pause? You know, the line from Maria Postlewaite's The Clearing, can we make a clearing in the dense busyness of our mind? To paraphrase a little bit, she says the dense busyness of our lives. I think they're parallel. All of this endeavor into stillness, into a steadiness, requires patience. You know, that one of the perfections, one of the aspirational qualities, of which there are 12, and these qualities of the heart, the patience and equanimity, they are close siblings in our capacity to settle into this moment. And often the moment isn't really how we would like it. Right? Either temperature is too hot, it's too cold, we're uncomfortable, something hurts, there's some pressure to do something else, someone that we love is in trouble. I mean, there can always be a condition that's like, excuse me, I don't really like that. Okay, that's the mind, right? And earlier naming the practice with evading as pleasant, unpleasant, things are often unpleasant. Okay, being able to build that in, it's not because something's wrong or that it's necessarily bad. It's just observing, oh, I would like this to be otherwise. There's a preference there. Okay, can we settle in with that to have patience? One, that it's okay. And I want to be really clear, this is not an invitation to doormatness, right? Or just, okay, whatever, I can't do anything about it. It's not a powerlessness. It's just it's a willingness to set aside our reactivity of, no, this isn't okay, right? That rallying against, I don't like this, I'm going to change it. I'm going to move in some way, whether literally or figuratively, actually move our bodies or we move our minds, or there's a constant reactivity to circumstances, either in the mind, to mind states, or circumstances in our lives of just move. We are a transient culture. And we can be so transient within our own being. And these teachings are saying, wait, sweetie, stay here. Just a little while. It doesn't have to be, you know, as the Buddha sat down until he said, on the night of his enlightenment, I'm going to sit here until I wake up. I don't have to go that far, but we could stay a little bit. And in so doing, we drop into the phenomenal power of the heart to be patient and say, it's like this. So from one of my favorite book, Kids Paramis, Ajahn Sucitto's, it's available as an ebook. And I know Maria found it, a hard copy. So it is possible to share with this book. And so the Pali word for patience is kanti. And it can be, it's patience, it's determination, it's forbearance. It's kind of these delicious qualities of a heart that is committed. You all showed up here, right? There's a forbearance, a determination of, okay, it's Thursday. I'm going to come to the Thursday Sangha. The Buddha famously declared Kante to be the supreme purification practice. Yeah, this idea of the myriad of ways we can experience impatience, whether it's impatience with ourselves, like, oh my God, how long have I been practicing? And still my mind does this. Or impatience with the people that we love, like, oh my God, they're still not ready. We need to go. You know, impatience with the people around us. there's a preference that people are not doing what we want them to do, and we get impatient because of it, right? Preference, unpleasant. Okay. The heart mind is habitually creating suffering and stress through reacting to, holding onto, or getting caught up in what life throws to at us. All the perfections, as a sidebar of the other perfections, or I might not get them all, but it's truthfulness and equanimity and metta and wisdom and resolve and wise energy. And that's the gist. I might be forgetting a few. Contributing to the lessening or dismantling of the suffering, but the specific quality of patience is to carry the heart through the turbulence of existence so that it no longer shakes, sinks, or lashes out. I love this book for these images of it. The patience carries the heart through the turbulence of existence. And sometimes people will be like, oh, I'm just not a very patient person, or I'm just impatient. There's sort of there's an identity piece of this is me, which we could unpack. But if there's a dismissal there in our own goodness, oh, that's not for me. I'm not patient. It's like, well, it's a skill, right? It's a muscle that we are born with. And then we just need to practice in easy circumstances, like with low-hanging fruit. Not necessarily the big areas where we get caught, but that little bit of patience where there's something that's uncomfortable. Can we stay there a moment? You know, and that's the beauty of the practice. When we sit, whether we're actually sitting or standing or lying down, that we notice the impulse to move because there's an aversion to something. Okay, can we offer, I'll stay a while. And a while might just be a couple of minutes. And then we gain confidence. Oh, I did that. I didn't move. Awesome. Patience holds us present with the suffering in a spacious way, encouraging the mind to open. And an open mind feels more peaceful in itself and more readily sees the cause of its suffering. Patience is not a numbing resignation to the difficulties of life. It doesn't mean the suffering is all right. It doesn't mean shrugging things off and not looking to improve our behavior or our lives. The practice of patience means bearing with dukkha without expectations that it will go away. And so many times when we're sitting like, well, I'll sit with this unpleasantness in my back, and if I hold my attention and awareness, then it'll lessen. The contraction will stop. Sometimes that works, sometimes not. But that hook, like the making a deal, okay, I'll pay attention to you if you go away, that's a trap. Yeah, and that the gentling ourselves into, okay, I'm going to sit with this. It will either change, by which it will get worse, it will get better, or it will stay the same. Those are kind of the three options. And there's a gentling into, okay, any of those things might be there, but we can stay curious. Yeah, a curious gentling into the moment of experience of, okay, it's just like this. Pure patience is a kind of acceptance that acknowledges the presence of something without adding to it or covering it up. I could go on. Every time I go into something, I'm just going to read this book. But the ability for us to stay with ourselves, right? That's kind of the whole game. And as a parallel, often the people that we're with, people that we love, that we may work with, that generosity of our own patience to hold space for someone else, that's an amazing gift, right? And we can feel it when we're with someone that's actually willing to not have a valence of an agenda or like, okay, got 5 minutes, hurry up. But really being able to ease into a spaciousness that someone that we can hold for others, but to first allow ourselves to experience holding that spaciousness for ourselves. To be able to rest in the support, in the gentle holding of that awareness, our gaze is so constant, our every move watched with such affection, a ceaseless vigil without condition or agenda. What if that's our home? Could we allow ourselves to be cradled by this awareness, this constant vigil that's gentle and patient, unrelenting in her embrace? Infinite space for whatever foolishness we may toss her way. This is actually here. The teachings of the Buddha say awareness is right here. as Thich Nhat Hanh say, happiness is available, help yourself. So too is the awareness, and the awareness requires or invites us to say, exhale. Oh, what's happening here? What's true in this moment? I'm breathing, I'm talking. You know, to start with this very simple awareness, and can be naming, noting, the mind is like this, the body is like this. When we do that, we're nowhere else. We're not lost in thought. We're not planning some trip over the summer. We're just resting in, oh, just be here. Yeah. I don't think I read this. from Rilke, be patient. I beg you. Have patience with everything unresolved in your heart, and to try to love the questions themselves as if they were locked rooms or books written in a very foreign language. Don't search for the answers which could not be given to you now, because you would not be able to live them. And the point is to live everything. Live the questions now. Perhaps then, someday far in the future, you will gradually, without even noticing it, live your way into the answer. So I invite you to close your eyes. Just to check in the body. Sometimes people just hear the word patience and they can constrict, and just notice if any of there was a gripping in any way. And if so, okay. Just noticing if there's an aversion to this idea of patience. Okay. Just again, noticing, oh, this is here too. Okay. Can I make space for this? Which kind of leads into a question of how do we, in our normal householder day-to-dayness, relate to this invitation of patience? Yeah, that's great for somebody else. Do we have an identity as being an impatient person? If so, could we release that? Of these beautiful perfections of the heart, some resonate more easily. Okay. That this ability, this muscle capacity to be patient, it's a skill like anything else. Just to play around, are there certain areas in your life where you feel like, oh yeah, I'm really patient? With a certain person we love, or an animal, or when we're out in nature, what are, if you were to sketch out the conditions which really support your being able to manifest and express patience? Just to play around. What are the conditions that support your expression of patience? And you may have already intuited the next question. What might be the conditions that support the lack of patience? That sense of impatience, hurry up, you know. The sense of there's not enough time, something's wrong, constriction around. Are there particular conditions that really support the impatience? Just being curious. Okay. In being able to identify if there were conditions that support patients, conditions that don't, then we can incline ourselves to conditions that support, right? And I'm not talking about the changing externalities. Sometimes that's much beyond our control. It's the inner landscape. Yeah. Telling ourselves we might, it's okay. There is enough time, even though we might be running late. Is there something you can change? No. Okay. Then there's no point in worrying about it. Is there something you can change? Yes. Okay, then you can change it. There's nothing to worry about. This easing into, there's a surrender, there's an equanimity. These are all close cousins to patience. The sense of, oh, okay, it's like this. So if we allow ourselves to be standing in the conditions that support our patience, the metaphorical field of flowers, shall we say, like, okay, where the body can relax. There's a sense of spaciousness of time, an absence of pressure. Is there something that feels unresolved in your heart? Is there a question lingering about how you are in your life? And to stay with a Rilke's image of like a locked door, a room, a very foreign language, something that you don't have the answer to, but a question you would like to live into, armed with this cloak of patience that allows there to be a sense of spaciousness and equanimity. What's the question you would like to live into? There may be more than one. We can so easily be at a place of, I want the answer now. You know, I'll just Google it, whatever. And can we allow there to be a sense of spaciousness of time, of I will live into this answer. This will be my life. The unfolding of the answer to this question and other questions. A surrender into things are unfolding as they should. I may like it, I may not. That's a preference. Things are unfolding according to a natural law that is beyond our control. Can we have the patience to rest? Can we have the faith and confidence to trust in our own goodness, to meet the circumstances as they arise, to meet these answers to these questions as they arise with a steady heart and a quiet mind? So I'm going to stop there. And thank you so much for your kind attention.